Hi everyone, and welcome to the TL Podcast. This is where you can learn, grow, and be inspired by some of the most influential leaders in their field. Because the first step to a better tomorrow is taking action today. I'm your host, Thomas Le Hoang, and thank you for tuning in.
Hey Thomas, how are you?
Good morning, or good evening for us, good morning for you.
Yeah, it's all good, wherever you are.
I thank you so much for making it, Nigel.
No problem.
And especially when you're about to celebrate your wedding anniversary, isn't it, next week?
Yeah, 25th.
Oh
yeah, it's amazing
God.
I got here.
So I really thank you so much for making it.
And no, my pleasure.
Now, I had the opportunity to have a quick chat with you the other day. So there will be a few things that I'll talk about that maybe the audience will be thinking, oh, they know each other, but really we don't.
No.
The amazing thing is when people are really going through compassion, it's almost like a direct line. You don't need to know each other. You speak from a different realm, isn't it?
Well, I think from a spiritual perspective, we're all just energy. We're all just connected.
Oh,
and
wow.
That,
That's
so
right.
You know, when you meet great people, you know, when there's a spark of energy, you know that the individual is truly compassionate.
That's nice.
So yeah, so it might feel like we've known each other for years, but that's the whole point.
That's nice. Let me start from somewhere. Now, I got to know you through the Compassion Show that you do on your podcast.
Yeah.
And on that podcast, you actually do interview a lot of people and constantly trying to dig something out of them. And it's almost like you want to go and explore what they have. But from observing this, I went, no, hold on. Nigel is the person we need to actually question and we need to ask, because
tables are turned. Yeah.
So I thank you so much. But let's start by asking you this. How do you define compassion?
Okay, well, that's a very good word. Sorry, it's a very good question. And I'll say that most people struggle to understand what the word compassion really means. And I speak to a lot of business people, a lot of leaders who, you know, say, like, oh, yes, we've got a lot of empathy in our business. So I'm leading from a place of empathy. And that's what I'm trying to change, because the word, you know, compassion and empathy are not the same thing. They're very, very different. But people get stuck in this realm of, oh yeah, I'm empathetic. Well, okay, that's good. I like it. You've got a tool that you're doing, but don't lead from that place. Please don't lead from a place of empathy. And they look at me, I'm a complete nutter. I say, well, what do you mean? So, because empathy is emotion. Compassion is intention.
Oh,
compassion wow. is a thing where you take action on what you have just heard. So if you have listened with empathy, beautiful. But if you stay at that point, as a business leader, as a people manager, or even, you know, a manager starting out in their career, and I suffered from this next thing I'm about to say, if we stay in the world of empathy, I start falling into the empathy trap. I start getting consumed by what I'm hearing from other people. My team are telling me their issues, the team are telling me their problems. And without action, then I just get consumed and I fall into this empathy trap. I go down these ever-decreasing circles. And eventually, I get burnout. I get empathy burnout. And the beautiful thing about compassion, because it is intentional, there's action assigned to it, you don't get the burnout because you're doing it. Now, that action may be hard. I'm not saying that compassion is woo-woo and let's go and hug all the trees everywhere. That's not what compassion really is. Compassion is, I'm going to take action on what I've just heard or what I've just seen, or I'm going to take a different action on the way I'm operating my business, in my operating model, in my leadership style, in my methodology, my approaches, in my contracts. I'm just going to take a very different approach. In fact, I was on a call yesterday with a business leader, and we were just talking about the fact that she was having to let someone go. Well, actually, a team of people let them go. And it was like, a layoff situation. I said, okay, this is a very difficult time for the person who is receiving it, the news, but also you, because I described it as, it was a team of 10. And I said, you're the leader trying to let someone go. You have to do this compassionately, both for the individual you're telling and for yourself. Really, really important. Because I did it in a mathematical model. I said, if I'm going to tell you, Thomas, that I have to let you go, and there's 10 of you, I'm the leader doing it, I've got 10 burdens. You're the recipient. You're just looking at me as one. So it's one to one between you and I, but I'm the leader, it's one to 10. So I've got an emotional carry of those 10 people. So I said, at this moment, you have to have self-compassion. Self-compassion is really, really important. And that can manifest in many different ways, in the tone of language you're using, or being honest, or having transparency, being tolerant, all these different traits that I talk about in my book. But that is the difference between compassion, and that's what it really means, absolute intention of action in a humane way. Even though it might be difficult or it might be great, you still have to act humanely.
Yeah. Now we just started like James Bond, straight into a question. So now, right like James Bond, now that the action has slowed down a little bit, so let's start on you first. Can you just tell
Okay.
us within about 5 to 10 minutes where you come from, your background, and how you started in business, and what led you to compassion, please?
Yeah, so that's great. So and stop me if I talk too long, because I get quite passionate about this. But so my backstory is that, in summary, I come out of the world of technology after 30 years. My initial career was in the hospitality industry. And that led me, as a young man, to go and live in Manhattan in New York, where I was working every hour that God gave me. 80 hours, 90 hours a week. I was playing a lot of rugby. I was having a really good time, as you would do being a young man in New York. But there was a moment when I went to this party in Long Island, and a nurse, to the guest, and she came up to me and said, she was a nurse. I didn't know her, but she came up to me and said, "Nice, you've got this big thing on your neck. This big thing on your neck." I went, "Oh yeah, I'm working out. I'm playing rugby. That's good. I'm doing all the weight training." "But Nigel, do you realise it's sort of only on one side of your neck?" I went, "No." She said, "Go to a doctor. Get that seen." So I went to my doctor in Manhattan, and he said, "Nigel, this is quite serious." I went, "I'm only 26 years old," and it turned out that I went to Sloan Kettering Hospital to get a diagnosis. And the options I had were tuberculosis, cancer, or AIDS. And they said, "We know it's not tuberculosis." So then I was thinking, "Oh my gosh, I've got a tough decision here." But they did something beautiful, and they said, "Go back to the UK, get into the National Health Service, and it'll be great. It'll fix you." So I did, and you've never seen anyone jump for joy when they were told they had cancer, because I didn't tell my family, I didn't tell my dad who came with me. To on my course, on my meeting to the doctor, he said, "Oh, you've eventually got cancer." Anyway, so I had to change my career because I was just too tired to go back into everything. But kind of thinking back then that my lifestyle, my leadership, I was overworking, probably had a lot to do with the fact that I was diagnosed with cancer. Anyway, so I moved into the world of technology. I ended up through my career sitting on global leadership teams, running global companies for high-tech companies. And gone through a couple of management buyouts. I've had a couple of IPOs. So, I've been and done it all in that space. But I think what drove me to where I am today, there was a moment when I went through an acquisition. We got acquired in 2012. But, we were a wonderful people-centered culture. We had it all going on. We were acquired by a massive global software giant who began to destroy the business within weeks. Now, I understand consolidation and all that kind of stuff, but the way they did it was brutal. And so this was my first experience, really, of toxic cultures. But something happened to me also. I began to become toxic. And it started to manifest itself when we were at this event in Mexico at the Four Seasons, and The leadership came up to me and said, "Nigel, you know, we're going public in about 2 years' time. We will see you at the top table." I went, "That's great. You know, money won't be an object. My career will be, you know, in the spotlight." And I said, "Well, my wife was with me, and we were having a good time. This, you know, we spent about probably spent about $1 million on this event. You know, anyway, it was we were celebrating the 1% of the company to really care about the other 99%. So I should have kind of realized how this culture was then." But anyway, so it kind of the story kind of went that, you know, "Nigel, please be like us, you know, at this the small group of us that we lead with fear. You know, we've got 2,500 employees in our company, we lead with fear. People, you know, are scared of us. Be like us." And I said, "What?" You know, I said, "How does that manifest itself? What are you talking about? I can't quantify that in my head. We want you to sack your worst performing 10% of your employees. If you can get it to 15%, then great. If you can get it to 20%, then magical." I'm like, "Guys, come on, I can't see it." And my wife's looking at me and she's thinking, I know what she's thinking. She's thinking, "Oh God, this holiday is going to be very short. We're going to be in a plane home tomorrow because Nigel's going to tell these people where to go." Anyway, I didn't. And in that moment, I sold myself to the devil and I said, "Yes, okay." So in that moment, I became what I thought was expected of me from the leadership. So I got back from that trip and I really began to put fuel into my toxicity. Really did. So I started to shame people who used to work for me publicly. I became that asshole you didn't want to work for. You know, I was sending emails at 3 o'clock in the morning and get really annoyed if people didn't send me an email back by 3:30. I may have called them up a quarter to four and say, "Why are you calling me? You know, da da." All these things. I did my sales forecasting call on a Friday afternoon. And it was horrendous because I wanted to feel bad over the weekend. You know, why was I doing these things? It was just absolutely madness because I'd learned it. There were learned experiences. Anyway, so I was in a really bad place. So I became, you know, I created a toxic culture. I was part of a toxic culture. And even when I left that company, I started to work for another company, which I kind of was one of the early founders on. I missed the opportunity to change. But at that moment, I realized I went from being a leader of a toxic company and moving into self-toxicity. So in that, from this point, I began to really make some pretty bad decisions all the time about my personally, professionally, for the other people around me. You know, I just began to make these terrible decisions. And there was a moment when I actually broke down. You know, I was beginning to sense it. I was beginning to feel my health was bad. I was smoking a lot. I was drinking a lot. I was in a really bad place. But I was still leading a team of high growth. This was the crazy thing. You know, we're winning all the awards, all that kind of stuff. But something began to change in my kind of psyche, and I kind of realized once I'd broken down, I was crying a lot. And I'd broken down that I had to do some self-reflection. I had to do change. Otherwise, either I'd do something silly with my own life because I'd hit the wall, or health would get me. One of those two things I kind of realized in that self-awareness moment, I realized that I was going to be doing. And I had to change the way I was leading people. I had to go back to the way I was. I had to remember how I was. So I did that and I went through a lot of self-reflection. I looked in the mirror of self-reflection a lot and I had to really come out of it. I started to read a lot about spirituality. That was a saving grace for me. I came across a really powerful spiritual masterpiece. That was very powerful. I just got back, I got grounded again. But then I had to decide, now I'm getting grounded, what do I do with my career?
You're going too fast.
So,
You're going too fast. What was a piece of treasure that got you back, or that helped?
that treasure was a book. Well, it's not a book, it's called A Course in Miracles. And let me just get it for you. It actually came from my little book I had as a child, my Daily Light book. Little, you might have A Course in Miracles is this beautiful masterpiece here. It's called A Course in Miracles, and it's a big old meaty book. So getting through this is, you know, and a daily course, daily practice I had to do. Really, this got me, and this book I would say put me on a different path to where I am today. So I started doing A Course in Miracles. It was really fantastic. So then I had to realize, okay, self-awareness, go on a journey to fix yourself. It won't be quick. You have to do the I'm gonna have to do some deep work, and that but my life will be much better for it. And so I said, okay, what am I going to do with my career? Oh, I'm a bit stuck here. I'm going to leave all this. I knew I had to leave this company where I was. And that was a financial question for me, because I'd leave a lot of money on the table. I was going to do that if I left. But I knew it was the right thing to do. So I made the conscious decision to do that. And as the universe always conspires, I got a knock on the door, the mythical knock on the door saying, Nigel, there's a company, I got a call from someone I knew who wanted me to go and run the UK for another American software company. And I went, oh God, here we go. Another American software company. This is going to be an absolute nightmare. I said, I can't do it. I'm not going to come and join this company unless these things are in place. Culture number one, culture number two, and culture number three. And I need to lead differently. And that was quite a bizarre thing. For the first time, I'd never said, I've got to scale this business by revenue. I've got to make sure that all these things about scaling a big company that I was just used to doing, I kind of changed my mindset. I said, no, it's all about the people. I need to get back into that. And I met the chairman, I met the CEO, and they were just fantastic. I mean, they really, really had this thing nailed on in terms of culture. So I was very happy to join them. And it was at that point that I began to change the way that I was leading, and actually not leading of people, but leading the operation of the business as well. And I remember turning up to meet my team, my new team of 120 people. So, well, quite a big, quite a nice team. And I said, right, hello everybody, I'm Nigel. I just want to let you know that I'm going to lead this team from a spiritual foundation. And they looked at me like I was a cult leader. Some of them thought I was a cult leader. Some of them thought I was, I was Dulally and an absolute, this was my first job. And others were scared because I think they felt this is great for them, but they didn't know what it really meant for them because they'd never experienced it. They'd never worked for a company that really, really got under the skin of what it means to be a human-centered leader. And so for the next 2 or 3 years, we transformed that business, not just the way we led for people, but the way we looked at how the business was operating, from contracts to the operating model, everything. And eventually I left that company because we went public in 2021. And I this was, just post-pandemic, and I came out of that situation thinking, the world of work is absolutely broken. We have people, by this time I'm really spiritual, but this time I'm really in tune with myself and really in tune with really what matters in life. And I wasn't chasing the dollar. I wasn't chasing time. I wasn't chasing those things that weren't real anymore, aren't universally real. But I did realize, I started a lot of research about the state of the workforce, and it was broken. You had a lot of people, a lot of reports saying that 1 in 4 employees are turning up to work sad or angry every day. I said, this is unacceptable. We can't live a life like this anymore. This is just crazy. Particularly when at work we spend, as a human being, if we're working, if we have the privilege to work, then most of our waking time is at work. And yet it's in that waking time at work when we're feeling sad or angry, depressed, anxious, controlled, manipulated, toxic. It's madness. So this is not life. This is not what life is all about. So I put myself on a mission to change that as best I could. So I created a business called Compassionate Business, which was a consulting business to try and help leaders understand that compassion is not just a skill, it is a strategy, not just a skill. And then that led on to the Compassion Show, where you heard some of the podcast episodes where I was trying to interview leaders and say, what are you doing differently in your world that's making your business be compassionate? And then it's just led on to something else, which we've just launched, which I'm so excited about. And I mentioned to you earlier, I'm going to, gift you membership here, which is the Compassion Exchange. So I was talking to my lovely wife a while ago, and we were saying, why is the world of work so difficult for many? I'm not saying difficult for everybody, but difficult for many. And family life is also difficult. So, because we can't separate the two. So we brought these two worlds together. So it's called the Compassion Exchange, the compassionexchange.com, which is an online community. And this is where we're really scaling up to help everyone, give them the tools, resources, the connections, the courses, the community, the discussions about how to live a better life, how to live a life of compassion, whether you're at work or at home, doesn't make a difference.
Okay.
So I'm grateful. It's a blessing, and
We
also to meet someone like you.
we're gonna go through all of these things. Okay, so now you've given it a bit of that storyline, and I'd like to just go through a few bits and pieces, if you will. So let's start first. I'd like to ask you, so you believe that if you're a good leader, but you work in a toxic culture, you become toxic, and that toxicity will also destroy you?
I'm sitting here talking to you with two incurable cancers, as a result of my toxic world. People say, "Oh, we don't know how he got them." I've got advanced prostate cancer and I've got non-Hodgkin lymphoma. I will bet you $100 Australian, well, I don't know how much that is, but I can attribute that to the way that I lived my life, and my life was my business. I was addicted to performance. So yes, I know there are things we have to be facing into the storm about the way that we lead. Now,
Because you
the
see,
challenge.
a lot of people think, hold on, but he's a leader. He was a leader. How can he catch that disease? I mean, if he's a leader, he's been toxic onto people. He's the one firing people at the wrong place. He's the one demanding and putting pressure onto people. And what you say is very interesting is that actually it ends up catching up with the leader himself.
When you're angry with someone, you're only angry with yourself. It's coming from self-anger. Everything that comes out that is toxic outwardly stems from an internal toxicity. That's reality.
Right.
Like when we're defending, if someone's angry, if someone's not liking what I'm saying, what do? I defend myself. I defend my position. That is just another form of attack. So defense is another form of attack. Toxicity is another, it manifests is that I've got self-doubt, I've got self-judgment, I've got a lot of self-criticism. So if I'm self-critical, that's going to come out as anger. It's
Right.
not coming out to someone and say, by the way, I'm not feeling great today. I'm having a bit of an emotional wobble, so please bear with me. What, if I get angry, here's a reason why. No, it's coming out as, why aren't you hitting a number? Which it's coming out all wrong.
Wow.
And that's what toxic leaders do. Particularly, the toxic there's leadership, there's toxic leadership, there's self-toxicity, and then there's the other thing, which is how do I manage myself if I'm in a toxic culture, if I'm a recipient of it? So here's why I think, here's why I really think it's really difficult for leaders to accept. And it took me a long time to accept it. And I was given the privilege to weep and cry and break down, to have that moment of self-awareness. If I didn't have that, I would have continued. So it's just this, how do I get as a people, and a leader is a people manager, a boss, a founder, it doesn't matter, a team leader, an individual working, how can I just get that moment of reflection? How can I be, this is what the book's all about, really. What can I do to help myself be a different individual and not bear the consequences of my actions? So there are a couple of key things that I was able to learn, and that's where the Course in Miracles really helped me. So if you don't mind, I'll just give you a couple of these traits that are the bedrock of change. And if anyone's listening, I would just say that out of the 10 traits of being a compassionate leader, and by the way, leader to me doesn't, there's no hierarchy to it, there's no job title, there's no job role. If you are compassionate, you are leading. You're leading yourself, more importantly. But there are two traits that I think everyone should try and pay attention to. And it's trait number one, which is the bedrock trait. This is the foundation trait, and it's called trust. And you might hear that word and go, oh, yeah, Nigel, I know, trust. Yeah, I get people to trust me all the time, blah, blah, blah. No. This is about self-trust. Such an important trait. This is when you look in the mirror and say, really? And I've got all the tools and techniques in the book to help people get to this point. But do I really trust myself? Do I really, really understand what's important to me? Have I encapsulated my values soundly. And this might in the future give you the strength to say, if I'm working in a toxic environment, this place isn't for me. I'm going to leave. It's such a powerful, powerful thing. Even if you are a leader, you might say, I'm in the wrong career. I'm in the wrong company. I'm leading wrong. So self-trust is so, so important. But this leads on to the second trait. And another word that when I use it, people go, oh, yeah, we know all about this. And the second trait is honesty. And it sits right on top of trust. So when you go through the journey of getting to self-trust, the next one is honesty. And this is not about getting people to believe the words that you say, the words that come out your mouth, the words that you put on your website, the words that you put in your marketing material. When you're going to a meeting in terms of real estate, when you're showing people around, it doesn't matter. This is not about getting people to believe the words that you're saying or the words that they're seeing or words they're hearing about your world. This is about consistency. Honesty equals consistency. If you think it's about believing the word to come out of your mouth, that's just a lie, really, which is a bit of an oxymoron, right? So honesty in the current state of what people think is actually a lie. The ego is very clever. Very, very clever when it comes to that. Honesty is consistency. And what that really means, going back to trust, is that am I consistent with every thought and action? Am I consistent with every thought and action? Therefore, what comes out of my mouth is true because it's completely linked to honest, to my trust values. So those two are so important. So if there's two traits I think that are so inwardly, so powerful, that will really help people, those are the two things. And then the other traits build on top of it, like self-compassion and generosity. And if I can do it, well, I'm on a roll. Let me just talk about trait number six, which is my favorite trait. And it's the one that's called, it's trait number six, is generosity. And it's the first trait to the first five traits are all about the inner self, and the next five traits are all about the service of others. And trait number six is about generosity. And when you start building all this trust and honesty and tolerance and gentleness and self-compassion, you are just so kind to people all the time. You are so generous. I call it my selfish trait, because the more that I give generosity, the more that I get back. I get back loyalty, customer service, customer care, employee loyalty. I get so much back, so that I give more of it because what I get back. This is what life's really all about. And then the traits go around in a circle. But that's it. So those are what I had to go through. I had to spend a lot of time learning all that until I
Yeah,
created a book called The 10 Traits of Compassionate Leader to help.
I just wanted to show that book to people so they can see it. So that is a book that
Ah, okay.
you just got
There it is.
on Amazon, and I think that you just mentioned two or three of those traits. But I'm gonna go back again from your story because it provides really a backbone for people to see your journey. So at some stage, then that toxicity got to you. And somehow you said, I had to go back to remembering. And I was thinking straight away that, hold on, you can't really do, yes, you can. So that's what I realized. You can do compassion if you're not authentic, but remembering who you were going back to being authentic, which is the ability to trust yourself with honesty, right? And that's, you then mentioned a very important word. You said you had to use self-awareness and to be true with yourself. And I thought, hold on, so the toxicity got to you. Instead of breaking down, you went back into reflection and tried to find yourself. It was that an easy time?
No, it was hard because in that moment, it's nice to look back at it now, and I really appreciate you taking me back there, because I don't, I skim I skim I skim over it quite a lot, but it was tough, But because I had when I was really, I was really going, Nigel, this is a real crap time for you. This is really bad. I just get I had to give yourself a bit of time, give yourself the breathing space that you need, and that that wasn't like a day. That could have that was took a couple of months, just to continually be aware of what I'm being told to listen out for in my mind. And it's simple things like, if we're a business leader or managing anyone managing people or managing ourselves, and we wake up in the morning and we go, yeah, I didn't like that yesterday. Just in that thought is the moment of opportunity to reflect. Yeah, I didn't like the way I spoke to that person yesterday. That didn't re well, that wasn't really good. That's self-awareness. That is the moment that we should build on. It's so quick. But if you can just hold it and go, right, let me build on that. Why did I do that? Rather than say, oh, Nigel, you didn't do a very good job of that and move on. That's like, that is, let me just take you through this. That is self-pity that moves into self-sympathy, into self-empathy.
Right.
But when you do something about it, that's when you're in self-compassion. And when you're in self-compassion, then you're able to truly reflect and do something about it. But it's not easy. And I'm saying this is not an easy thing to do because we're going to have to unpack a lot of what we've been taught. We learn to lead people from our ancestors, our corporate ancestors, right? This is what we've been told. And you don't get taught how to really self-lead at business school, at college, or even when you join a company. No one teaches this stuff, but it's the most important thing. And I would just like to add that we are in a global crisis, that's quantifiable by the fact that lost productivity due to anxiety or stress or sadness or people just working in a corporate culture that's toxic is costing us globally 9% of our global GDP around the world, and that equates to $9 trillion. So this is fiscal. This isn't just a nice thing around, oh yes, I'm going to go and lead people with a bit more kindness and empathy and compassion. No, this is problematic. And I was speaking in a global at a conference a couple of weeks ago, and it was all about AI. And I got on stage and said, "Who thinks that AI is the biggest challenge you've got in your world?" All the hands went up. I was saying, "No, this is the biggest problem we face in business: how we manage people and how we lead ourselves. That's our biggest problem, not AI." I know I went off piste a bit in terms of your question, but I think the self-awareness, just what I had to learn was stop in the moment when a thought comes into my mind about something that I did that I didn't like, that wasn't me, and how was I doing that today, and how 10 years ago I wasn't doing it. What was the difference? So in that moment, I was able to build on the self-reflection and the self-awareness that eventually said, you've got to make a decision. For some people, if it happens instantly, beautiful, but it wasn't for me, it wasn't instant.
Okay, so excuse me, I'm going to become a bit more personal here now. So
Yeah.
you cancer when you were 26.
Yeah.
Then you go through a place where you go back to high output and you go back to forgetting yourself again. But and then you go back to cancer to try and go back to whatever is real. So some people will say, oh, well, it's easy for Nigel to be compassionate. He's gone through cancer. So but your first time, you didn't get it. So something must have happened. So that's why that second time when you had to go into self-awareness, something had to happen. I mean, can you tell us? Was it that your wife picked you up? And was it that you plunged yourself into the discipline of changing yourself? Because when you're talking about honesty is being consistent, in that moment of self-awareness, that has to be a long period.
Yeah, so I when I was first diagnosed with cancer, I was young, invincible. I changed my career. and my work became my priority,
Right.
even with my family. I mean, I put it first. Why? Because I was had a desperate need to be accepted. As humans, we put acceptance from others ahead of our own way of self-acceptance. So I was constantly working, I was constantly traveling. I mean, at one point in my career, I remember over a 2 week period, I went to Heathrow on a Sunday evening, I was in Miami on Monday morning, I was in LA on Wednesday, I was in Hong Kong I was in Singapore on the Thursday night, and I was in Hong Kong on Saturday morning. I got a phone call saying, can you come back to LA on Tuesday morning? I went, yes. I mean, that was my life. Why did I do that? Well, because I was so desperate to be accepted by people. I was so desperate to be accepted by my leadership. And I wanted them to see that I was this hero. I would do anything for them. I didn't know underneath I was beginning to really burn out. You know, this was putting a massive emotional toll on my body and my health. But in my mind, I was the hero. I was the leader that I want everyone to follow. And when I'd get back to my office, I'd start shaming people. Why don't you do what I'm doing? Look, I'm on the plane every 5 seconds. I'm doing these big deals. No, you got me doing the same thing. I had no respect for their own family life, none of it. Didn't care. What your role is to satisfy my need to hit my target. You know, that's what you're all here to do, is to help me be successful. It's only when you start beginning to accept things aren't going right with your health. And when it happened for me, the kickstart was when I was with a colleague in a bar, and I just started to for no reason in my mind, I just started to weep uncontrollably. I just started to cry,
Wow.
and
Wow.
I was like, in that moment, I went, "Oh my God, this is the beginning here, of either it's going to be good or bad." And I said, "Listen, I've got to go and call my brother. I have to go and speak to him right now." Well, I hadn't really spoken to him quite a lot, I hadn't spoken to him a lot, but he's my brother. Because I need someone to tell me the hard truth. And he did. And I had to work on that. So when I said before, I was lucky enough to have a moment when it came out as tears, it came out as weeping. For most, it sits in depression. It sits in that moment of self-doubt,
Yeah.
self-judgment, self-criticism. It doesn't, you know. And that can live with people forever. Not everyone's given the opportunity to have it recognized physically. It stays in the emotion. But we have to break that cycle. We have to just help people understand that if you are feeling a bit like that, there's a way out of that. And it will just change your life completely. So I think, by the grace of God, I think I was given a lesson. I think from 26 to 56, almost 30 years later, when I was diagnosed with two more cancers, I think he was just saying, he, she, whatever your belief is in the word of God, but I do believe in that. This is your lesson, Nigel. This is I've been giving you these lessons. Right, now I'm going to do something about it,
Right.
and I've changed. So that for me, that's how it manifested itself. And actually, this individual I was with, who I hadn't spoken to for years, since that moment, I spoke to him a month ago. And he said, "Nigel, I've seen the book and all that kind of stuff." He said, "How did it manifest itself? How did you know?" I said, "You were in the room when it happened. You were there." It was like, well, yeah. I said, "That's what that was all about." And I
Right.
think, and another thing, I don't want to keep on rambling, but I think the thing that for me, another beautiful benefit of all of this, is just this vulnerability. I'm very open about these things. It doesn't, I talk about it. I talk about my cancer. I talk about my pain. I talk about all of that. And there's something beautifully strong about vulnerability. But we're just not allowed to be it at work, because the world thinks it's weak, or you shouldn't be doing it. But it's just who we are as human beings. It's just like, we've got to change this. It's just not
Yes.
right.
So from that place, from self-awareness, where you've done all the work, obviously it started with self-compassion. Now, is it possible to do compassion without self-compassion? Is
No.
it possible to act as a compassionate leader without being self-compassion at first?
Great question, and thank you for asking it. And here's my controversial, provocative answer. The answer is no, and I'll give you the reason why. There are many people on this planet. You can look at Nelson Mandela, you can look at all these great leaders of the world who demonstrated their ability to give compassion, be kind and be noble and all those wonderful things that compassion can give, and also receive compassion because others are giving it to these people. But they're living in turmoil underneath all of that because they haven't got self-compassion. So you can give, receive, but you have to have self. And when you have true self-compassion, and that, there's loads of things that we do around self-compassion, and again, it's that crossover trait between the inner to the outer, then you can be authentically compassionate. And I think this manifests itself as well is around acceptance. A lot of people do compassionate things as an image. They do it because I want to be seen to be compassionate. What will people see of me if I am doing a kind thing? The notion that I'm, oh, great, people seeing I'm a great leader. But that's not what compassion's all about. That is, again, it's in my mind, it might seem a bit odd. That's negative compassion. That's not real compassion. When you do something without wanting any recognition, you don't need recognition. It's just natural and it's beautiful. You're not doing it from a place of acceptance, or you're not doing it from a place of brand imagery. Then you have self-compassion. That's when it really becomes, you're living it every single day. And this isn't just about us as individuals. It's how we advertise, how we market, how we sell. What are we doing? I was talking to a business, an online business, two or three of them not so long ago, and I said, "What's the first thing that I see when I come to your websites? Free 14-day trial, give me a credit card." So who's that for? I mean, and this is where the world of compassion can come into. It's things like this. You're not doing, that's not a compassionate thing to do. You might think it is because you're saying, "Here's something free for 14 days." But in reality, you're doing it from a selfish place. You're doing it from a place of greed. So you're going to have to rethink this. And because if you're pushing out, "I'm going to give you free 14-day trial, give me a credit card, and then I'll start paying you," you don't trust yourself as an organization. And
Very,
they're
very,
going,
very good. Very good. I like it. But now, I deal mainly in very small team. I mean by that, not the 2,500 people that you've led, but probably the average team is about 15, 20 people. And if you have a good organization, maybe 50, 60 people. So, first of all, I want to ask you this question for them, because the bottom line is very important for them, because they have a loss of income or profit this month. It may take them 2 or 3 months to recoup, and they only have to have 2 of those months, and then suddenly they run out of cash. So it's, first of all, it's being compassionate for them. For a lot of these guys, it's a weakness. Is that a weakness, to be compassionate in the small business?
No, I at a small, I've been an entrepreneur myself, so I know how difficult it is. I mean, cash is always king wherever we go. And running, within 60-day mindsets, 90-day mindsets, for some people, week by week mindsets, because the world is different today. I think compassion is the strongest thing that you can do. And I say in for many different ways. One, it's how you manage your thought processes in difficult times. So if you're looking at your EBIT all the time, you're looking at your margins all the time, and you're constantly worrying, then thinking in a compassionate, self-compassionate way allows you to control those thought processes in a more positive way. And if you're thinking in a more positive way and you're less stressful, because trait number eight is patience, so it gives you a bit of patience. That will then come out in how you treat your team of 10, 15, 25, 60 people. That'll be different. Therefore, you're building loyalty. Therefore, they'll be more committed. And you're being honest, you're being vulnerable, and you're telling everyone, so they stay with you. So you've got your employee retention is better, your customer loyalty is better, just the way you control things in your EBIT. And if you are thinking about, eventually, if you start thinking about how do I apply compassion into my operating model, then like it worked for me, I saw a 60% improvement in my revenue within 60 days. I saw my profit margin increase because I wasn't, people were staying, therefore didn't have any backfill issues. I started to rethink my training. So my customer loyalty really improved because people were believing what we were saying as a business. I mean, things like, crazy things like, I wasn't able to do this, but what I wanted to do, we're a software company and I wanted to remove a support and maintenance contract. I didn't want to have one. We were charging customers 20% support and maintenance. I think, what are we no good? Is our technology no good that we have to charge people for that? I said, I want to get rid of it. I don't want it. It's free. And so these kind of things. So if you are a small business, you have to have a bit of faith and trust that compassion is the strongest thing that you will do. It will be your saving grace that this will give you. If you think you will be able to turn your tide with anger and fear and aggression, it's very short-term thinking. And if you continue that way, God forbid you end up like me and having to face dire, severe personal circumstances and health circumstances. We have to face into the storm with a different mindset. First of all, turn your back into the storm because then you can see what's coming your way. And then you'll be able to deal with it much better. If you continue to have your back against it because you want to have this fear leadership structure, you want to lead with a bit of anger and that kind of stuff, you might think it's good, but it's all just a myth. It's not. Turn into storm with compassion, and it will change your life. It will help your business. It will help your family life. It will help your health life. There are so many benefits. It's the strongest thing that people will do. Do you want to be lying on your deathbed looking back and saying, people thought I was a shit, or people thought I was graceful? That's your choice.
I get
Choice.
that.
I
So
do get passionate about it.
that was nice. So I understand that, the benefits of a compassionate business is that you breed trust and loyalty in people, that you have a high performance because people are safe. There's a reduced loss because people are not going to try and stay away from the business or being burned out. But in the end, your customer wins. So there's a lot of these benefits. So can you just give me something practical? I am running a business. I'm in trouble. Now I'm going to get attention from a lot of visitors. So I'm running a business that needs to perform. And we in difficult times. What will be five things that I can do straight away to change the direction of my challenges?
I think number one, and I'm bound to say this, is about the self. I think, it's just give yourself a bit of breathing space to really look at how am I leading? What is my surrounding like? What's my environment like? And I was talking to a lot of people in America recently who clearly have a quite a toxic culture everywhere, and that is with permission. So it's kind of a thing. Oh, it's great to be a fear-based leader because there's no consequence, right? So you've got to start thinking, is that truly what I really believe? So going back to trust, is that really what I believe? Am I believing all the hype and all the myth? So I think you need a lot of grounding on the center, and then start to talk to your team about all of this. So identify where your weaknesses in or opportunities for development of growth for your team and your people. What are they really thinking? What do they really want? Same with your market. What do your market really want? And don't start. I would avoid doing the natural thing, which is what we've always been taught for decades in leadership and business planning. Oh, what's my competition doing? Put them. Don't worry about them for now. Just don't. really put it on, what am I doing? What's going to make me great? What's going to make me happy? And how do I get there? What's the framework of that growth? What's going to be good for my team? What's my family situation like? How am I taking this burden home with me? Am I taking my precious home with me? Because I bet you 9 out of 10 you are. If you're having a stressed out day, you're doing one of two things, particularly if you're a white male of my age. You are taking this home and it's like this. I'm not going to share with anyone the pressures I'm under because I've got the badge. I'm the founder, I'm the CEO. I'm not going to tell anybody. And it comes out with anger, problems, money issues, because we just don't want to share. We're terrible at doing it as a man. But we're crying underneath. That's the problem, because we're not sleeping well. And we wake up with it. We go to bed with anxiety and worry. We wake up with anxiety and worry, and we take that back into work. So this is just a self. We're going round and round in circles. It's the plates are spinning, and ever decreasing circles of anxiety, and then we just can't have the clarity that we need in our mind to make a good decision about our business. So we're looking at these negative issues that are going on. I go, anyone who talks to me about negative growth again, I'm gonna get rid of. People talk about negative growth. Come on, what are you talking about that for? It's not anyway. But how am I gonna manage my cash? How am I gonna manage if I can't afford to pay people? Do I have a 90-day enough cash to take me through the 90 days? It's having a mindset that allows you to deal with those problems much more clearly and from a real place of strength, not fear. That's the thing. So you'll make better decisions. You really will. Even if those decisions are hard to make, you'll still do it better. You'll be human when you make those decisions. And therefore, you won't carry this baggage around with you, which we all had to carry. I remember how difficult it was being an entrepreneur, having to find money, raise money, manage money. All these things were just so difficult. And I got so angry because I was annoyed with myself. How did I let this happen to myself? I've got responsibility for others. Oh, God, it's just the burden was so hard. If I just had this, if I had the skill then about thinking compassionately, leading compassionately, the outcome would have been very different. Very, very different.
Okay. The issue is people are scared. They think
Yeah.
of the word compassionate and they're going, people are gonna take advantage of me, they're gonna use me. And suddenly they don't wanna do the word.
You can't be used. You can't. It's impossible to be used by someone else. It's
Oh.
impossible, because you're going back to self. You go don't self trust. If you've really spent the time doing self trust and do the work, by the book, you buy it. But if you are centered on what your real values are, it's impossible to be hurt by anyone, because what is hurt is I'm not accepted. That's what it really is. I'm not accepted by someone. Therefore, my self-doubt, my self-judge, my self-criticism all kicks in. That just goes away. It's this compassion is the strongest thing that you can have in your life. Because it turns out, like, here's the thing. Oh, people don't like me. Well, the people don't like me because you're not compassionate. When you're compassionate, people like you. So you don't have the problem to you don't have that problem to begin with. It just goes away. So it's impossible, right? It's not something you even consider or think about.
That is so good. Now that I have traveled through that little journey that you shared with us, let's talk about now this new enterprise that you're starting with, because this is I saw a little bit of that the other day, and I thought, no, this is too big. He must have a huge organization to just organize that. So, and that is about your new app or the computer,
The Compassion
the
Exchange.
program, yes, the
Yeah,
exchange.
the Compassion Exchange, .com, not .org, but .com, is a online membership community.
Yes.
And what I'd like to offer your listeners, I'll send you a code if you want to, and we can put it on the screen so they can
I
get
think you
a
need
discount
that.
code. The other thing about compassion that you're giving all the time. It's a wonderful thing. It's so great. Anyway, so it's an online membership community that is designed to help teams, people in teams, leaders on their journey of development, and senior execs at all different levels of membership. But inside of even at the Pathfinder, which is the entry point, and it's only £7 a month. It's not expensive. Inside of that, there are a community where people can come in and talk to each other. There's, every week there's a drop-in office hours thing where people can network. There are free resources, there are self-compassion resources in there. So we have something called the Sanctuary, where there's mindfulness courses, meditation courses, there's help courses around that. There are, as you know, there's other courses as well. So we're just announcing on October the 8th is the 10 Traits Mastery course, which is a 4-month course, 1 hour a week, but lots of work to do. I keep on saying you've got to do the work. Well, the daily practices, the education, and but it's all. So the 10 Traits Mastery course, which is for the Champions membership, is we're doing it together. It's not a one-on-one, it's not self-paced. I'm bringing everyone together to understand so we can share, we can be vulnerable. We're going to have to go into our own work. We're going to say we're going to learn something about trust. We're going to immediately take that practice back into our work and our home life, and we're going to share what happened or what didn't happen. So there's lots of things around inside that. There's boardroom discussions. We're talking about the impact of compassion and AI. There are networking events for leaders. There are playbooks that we've created. So if someone really wants to understand, how do I start the conversation with about compassion in my team? There's a playbook for that. How do I do onboarding compassionately? How do I, we've got something new. Have stay interviews with your team. So if you're worried about people leaving your company, have stay interviews with them regularly. So there's all these playbooks are available to everybody. There's lots and lots of things inside the community, and so that's what we've created. Because, and there's something called the family circle. So we brought in for people who are parents at work. That's a high pressure thing to cope with, right? So if you have problems with your family at home, or you're struggling, and just things are difficult, what do? You bring them into work, particularly if your work is your home office. You can't avoid it. So we've brought the family into this community, which is a wonderful thing. And my wife's leading the whole of that because she's a trained hypnotherapist, and she's a family coach, and she's helping a lot of teenagers up to 24-year-olds. So we've brought all of that in there. We've also got access to coaches. So we've got mindfulness coaches, we've got psychosocial coaches, we've got leadership coaches, we've got a forgiveness coach.
Wow.
How brilliant is that? Doing conflict resolution through peaceful ways. Mind blowing. All these other things we've got in there for everybody. So it's a membership program, and it's great. We're going to be really excited. We just launched it 2 weeks ago, so there are loads of people in there. We've got people from, obviously you're coming in. We've got leaders from India in there, South Africa, America. So this is a global community, all of which will have different perspectives and different challenges and needs, but we're coming together to change society, one member at a time.
And I think it is happening at the right time, especially what we know has happened yesterday. I don't have to go into that yesterday in America, but you can see that the need for compassion now is no longer a little word. What I like about the compassionate exchange is that you have encapsulated a lot of people to cover every trait in your book, because it's one thing to read the book, and I think it's great because it brings your awareness. But a lot of people, they think, I've read the book, now I can do it. And this
I'm
is,
fixed. Yeah.
it's a bit like me driving past the gym every day and thinking because I've driven past the gym, I've lost weight. That doesn't work, right? So you have to be inside that gym. And I think that what you have created with your website now is a gym where people can come in, and today they might want to do some push-up. Next day they might go and attend this class, and it's unbelievable. And I think that £7 is cheap, Nigel. You're gonna have to rethink that, right? So, but I believe it's a giveaway at £7. So the big thing that would like to ask you is, why are you doing it now? You should be taking the time to relax. I mean, why are you trying to tackle something that big now?
I think it's a beautiful question. I'm just so motivated. I changed my answer while you were asking the question, and I was answering it. I'm doing it because I am compassionate. I think I just want to give. I want to share, and I can't do this on my own, number one. If I can go and poke government in the eye and change policy around business, then they're wonderful. But we are building this incredible ecosystem, and I want to be able us all together to come together to just change and leave something for the next generation. My daughter's 19. If there's something we can do to help that world, that generation, because oh my goodness, they have a different expectation. Or that Gen Z, I hate putting things into buckets of names, but Gen Z and Gen Alpha, they're coming into the workforce. My people my age, if you're over 45, you have not got a clue how to control this lot. You have not got a clue. I mean, continually do I get, Nigel, they're entitled, these lot. Yes. And thank goodness. Their emotional intelligence is very high, but emotional resilience is very, very, no, emotional intelligence is very high, but resilience is very, very low. Keep the emotional intelligence high and let's learn from them, but let's build up their resilience. And this is what this is all about. So I'm just so thrilled. I mean, I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'm working on this stuff. It's not a chore. It's not, it's a mission. It's a vision. It's something that's really, really excites me because I really see the pain and the problems. I've been through it. Therefore, I've got to give something back. And I'm not saying I'm not a guru. I'm not any of that. I'm just someone who's lived through it, survived it. It's having to cope with, a pretty traumatic illness at the moment. I'm happy. It doesn't worry me. I'm great. So that's what motivates me, I think, because it saddens me. I'm also, I think, the other thing that I was a big motivator, I'm also a trained Samaritan. So it's a volunteer for charity where we listen to people who are really, really at the end of their tether. They're considering ending their life. So it's an end of life charity, and I'm on the phone and I'm listening and going through the motions with them. And I've noticed more and more people are calling up about their work life being the reason why they're thinking about ending their life. And that saddens me. That's unacceptable. And being a business leader that has run global teams and lots of people, we have a responsibility. We're
Yes.
accountable to change
Yeah.
that.
I just want to mention though that when you talk about your book, the traits of a compassionate leader, it's actually we are all our own leaders. It's not just for the boss of a company. We are as an employee, as a receptionist, we are a leader ourselves. And unless we know how to lead ourselves, we're going to allow some of these people to take advantage of us. And so I think that everyone is entitled to this. This is the amazing thing is that you have taken all that knowledge that you've had gathered over the years from the corporate upper shell, and you're actually trying to share it in, through the entire organization so that the person who's just joined as a junior, even receptionist, can now learn the same skill. This is the beauty of it, you know?
Yeah, because I define about sometimes I regret using the word compassionate leader because people do think, oh, that I must have a particular job title or be in a certain place in the hierarchy organization. I'm saying no. Leader has no, again, I said earlier, no job title, no role, no. If you are starting out on your journey in the world of business, this is the moment when you should read the book. Because it will change the way that you live and operate and lead forever, and it will stop you being taught all the bad stuff that I used to teach people. Because we learn from the people who go before us, right? It's a learned experience. So I think if you are starting out on your career, this is a wonderful moment because you become such a brilliant
Yeah.
influence to people over time.
Yes, that's why I didn't look at your title as compassionate leader, but as a compassionate self. And I think that you started the podcast like this. Well, we're getting to a stage where we're going to say goodbye to each other. And I always ask for my guests one last question. And maybe you have answered that already, but I'll ask anyway. So, Nigel, how do you know you're leading an inspired life?
Oh, there's something beautiful about knowing you have inner peace.
Oh, wow.
Something, and that really means that when the shit hits the fan, of which it does throughout every part of every day in life, your response to it is so different. Because you see what it really is. You understand what it really is. It's not what you think it is in the previous days when I would respond to those instances that happen every single day that came towards me in a very different way. And that was a way of anger, friction, fear, all those things that were negative because I had my back to the storm of it all. But when you have, when you have, what I have, this is just for me, this is my personal reflection on it. I have such inner joy now because I was able to go through all of that terrible situation. I respect it. I'm grateful for it. Even though I've got two incurable cancers, you can say I've got terminal cancer, I still have immense joy. And that's when you know. And it I know that again, I don't want to repeat myself, but it's when things happen, I'm able to have a different way to respond to it. I'm clear. I'm conscious. I have clarity. I'm thinking humanely for myself and for the others that I give. So, I'm hopefully it's hard. I continue have to be working at it all the time. I'm not a guru. I'm not a guru. I'm just someone who's gone through it. But I have to, every day the 10 traits is what I try to live by, and I have to work it. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I forget, and then I'm immediately able to recognize it and come back into it. So, that's it. And my family life is so strong. I love what I'm doing. I just want others to feel that.
Thank you so
Because I
much.
know that, there's so many people in my world. I always think about the world of work, but so many people who are just not feeling great.
No.
The depression on the ver they're just not happy, and there's depression, and there's stress, and there's anxiety, and there's fear. Let's get rid of that. And when we get rid of that, watch performance grow. I mean, rapidly. I mean, it's incredible how this happens for your performance. And so compassion equals strength. It equals leadership. It equals power. It equals all these wonderful things. It's incredible.
Thanks for listening to the TL Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode and want more inspiration like this, don't forget to subscribe. We'll see you in the next one.